Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd. This is Jessica, and I am joined today by Christine Januzzi. She is a journalist, a cheese specialist, a content creator, and World Cheese Awards judge. In 2023, she was inducted into the Guild de Fromagère in Bra, Italy. A dual American Italian citizen, Christine hosts cheese tastings and bespoke tours in Tuscany and beyond. And some of you may be familiar with her on social media as NYC Cheese Chick. Back in January, I had a chance to catch up with Christine in person when she was in New York City. And honestly, we could have spent all day in that cafe talking cheese related things. And I am so happy to welcome her to Cutting the Curd so you can join in on the fun. Welcome to the podcast, Christine.
Thank you so much, Jessica. I'm so happy to be chatting with you today.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of people who follow us on Instagram also probably follow you. You have such a great account and you expose us to so many wonderful things in Florence and beyond. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into cheese and how does Italy fit into that? Were you living in Italy at that time or were you in New York?
Actually, I had moved to Italy for a couple of years in my early 20s, from 2002 to 2004. I'd always been into food. You know, I had an Italian-American upbringing, but I didn't grow up eating fancy cheese. And, you know, started to get a bit more into wine when I was living in Italy during that time. It's such a part of the culture here. And then when I moved back to New York a few years after I got back, I went to an event at NYU's Casa Italiana, the Italian Center at NYU, where I graduated from, about the evolution of Italian-American food from Italian food. And one of the speakers there was Lou DiPaolo of DiPaolo's Cheese Shop in Little Italy. And he was the first person I ever heard speak about cheese with such a passion and such knowledge. And I had things I had never really thought about, you know, the terroir and the seasonality and, you know, where are the animals? Are they in the mountains? Are they in the valley? Is it the summer, the winter? And he really was the first person who inspired me to kind of fall down the rabbit hole of cheese. And I ended up writing an article about him and his family's shop, which is still such a gem in New York. And that's kind of how it started. It sort of snowballed from there.
That is so wild to me that you were already had a couple of years of Italy under your belt. You came back to the United States, to New York, and this is where you started taking that deep dive. And did that ultimately lend you into a career in cheese, or did you have other, like, this just sounds so exciting to me that you just like stumble upon something new.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, it was kind of like it was a sort of slow beginning. I was actually working at NYU at the time in the communications office, and then my second article about cheese was about Anne Saxelby. She was an alum of NYU, and in 2012, I think I happened to read in the New York Times that she won the Small Business Award of the Year, and so I interviewed her for an article about the alumni magazine for the NYU alumni magazine. And her passion for cheese started when she was in Florence, actually studying abroad for a semester. So then I had these two cheese articles, and then I found out about Culture magazine because a friend of mine whose family has a shop in Brooklyn, he was being interviewed. And so I said, oh, you know, I have these two cheese articles to the writer, and do you guys, you know, accept pitches? And the editor at the time liked my writing. And so I started to write for them kind of on the side, you know, still having a full-time job. But then it just started to snowball from that. And, you know, learning as I was writing and interviewing people. And I started the NYC Cheese Chick account on Instagram in 2015.
Wow, that seems like ages ago in social media.
It does. And actually, I was very reluctant to go on Instagram at that time. You know, I was a writer and I was like, it was a friend's wife who talked me into it somehow. She said, oh, you know, for your brand. I was like, what brand? You know, you have to be on there. And I was like, I'm not a photographer. Somehow she convinced me to just that I should try it. And I remember how nervous I was. And I just came up with the name NYC Cheese Chick, which I thought was cute. And I did a little bit of research about, you know, how to post. And I mean, I think what distinguished me a little bit early on was that I had photos from my travels and I had photos, you know, that were a bit different. And at that time, I mean, there wasn't quite like the cheese board phenomenon that there is now, but I sort of slowly went on there. And then because of that, though, I got my first invite on a press trip in 2016 here in Italy from the Pecorino Toscano Consorzio. And they found me on Instagram, and that was the only American journalist that they brought over. You know, they had 10 people, and they knew that I spoke Italian. And that was how I was, you know, got that first invite. And I actually ended up quitting my full-time job at the time to do that press trip.
Wow. Well, you got to follow your instincts and follow your passion, and, you know, the universe will provide.
Like, exactly.
You know? I think we've talked about that. So that's pretty inspiring. And what a different time that was pre-COVID. So what happened in 2020?
Yeah. So, you know, in 2019, I had been to Italy 3 times for work, researching some articles. I was here with Central Formaggi in Sardinia. And then that was the first time I was invited to judge in the World Cheese Awards, which was in Italy for the first time in Bergamo in the fall of 2019. And during that time, you know, when I would post on my social, people were, you know, messaging me and said, oh, you go to the coolest places. I want to go. I want to go with you. Take me there. And so I started to kind of toss around this idea of, and I was using the hashtag NYC Cheese Chick in Italy, and I was tossing around the idea of doing some kind of tour experience here. And I was just putting, I don't know, feelers out there in my stories. Would you come if I, you know, would you be interested? And there, I could feel that there was interest. So I was thinking that I would have tried to do something like that in 2020. But I obviously before what happened, I was thinking maybe I would have organized some kind of, you know, full trip from the US or something, not envisioning that I would be living here, you know, moving here at that time necessarily. I mean, I love Italy and you know, was back and forth. And actually my dual citizenship came through in 2019, which kind of felt like destiny for me after the fact that I had it, because it was a 3-year process. And then it was just during COVID, you know, as I had the dual citizenship and I was doing content for Parmigiano Reggiano, and you know, New York was so empty. And I was thinking, I was writing for La Cucina Italiana also. So writing a lot about Italian food, not, you know, not just cheese. And I thought, let me go over there as an Italian citizen and just see what happens. I really didn't have a definitive plan at the time. And so I came at the end of August, 2020. I think I booked the plane ticket for 12 weeks and I had to do a 14-day quarantine before I could even go out in public. And then I ended up staying for 10 months straight during, you know, we had our second lockdown here and, you know, the various visas. I mean, I could have always gone back to the US at any time as an American citizen, as a dual citizen, but, you know, then I was doing virtual tasting and doing the content and, you know, learning more about Italian cheese living here. And so that's sort of how it kind of happened again for me, this, you know, now the second move here.
So, has a lot changed pre and post COVID there? Do you feel kind of like things have kind of normaled out a bit, or what is the temperature of things in Italy right now with the like cheese economy, for lack of a better
word? I mean, in terms of like, you know, the tourism, I mean, it's certainly like back and maybe even bigger than ever, I think. I mean, there's so many people here. So, I mean, I went to Bra when they first had it again after COVID in 2021, and it was, you know, not nearly as crowded as in past years. And I think, you know, that was still kind of like a bit of a precarious time. But then last year in 2023, it was felt, you know, very normal, and you know, it felt like everybody was there and lots of international people. And so big difference from 2021.
So you talked a lot about your writing and also some of the virtual stuff that you do, but you do some work in person as well, leading tours and tastings. What are some of the things that you do in Italy in person?
Yeah. Well, you know, I had done a little bit of this in New York. I taught a couple of classes at Murray's. I did something at the French Cheese Board. I did something at the Bosco Showroom and did a few private events pre-COVID there. And then when I was living here, a friend of mine who does fresh pasta lessons, she was saying, well, why don't you just, you know, try doing some tastings in your apartment? And so that was kind of how I started. I had done a few virtual things during COVID. And then in just as tourism, you know, as people started coming back, I started to host a few tastings in my apartment. And then that has kind of snowballed. And then I also do a more kind of casual tasting in the market where we go to the market and I, you know, kind of show you some of my favorite spots. And then we do a standing tasting of cheese and salumi at the family run stand where I get most of my cheeses for my tastings. And then I've also done kind of customized experiences where, you know, I spend a day with you, we get a driver, we visit a cheesemaker, a winery, and people that I have personal relationships with. And that's something I'd like to do more of too, because I really like to share that passion with people. And it's been nice to hear the feedback that what comes through is that not only my own passion for it, but the relationships I have with the people. And it's a very genuine kind of, I mean, I'm only going to take people to places that I really believe in and people that I, you know, love and to taste cheeses that I feel really good about. So, and this, it's the same with my tastings. I mean, the tastings that I've done in my apartment, I've also done some at a wine bar here in Italy and a few other locations. It's like a guided tasting where I personally curate the cheeses. I try to often get cheeses that aren't even available here in Florence that people send me from all over Italy. So it's usually, it's really a fun experience and delicious, but enlightening and, yeah, it's really been a beautiful thing for me to be able to do here. And it's a bit unique, you know, that I feel like there's not so much of that happening around cheese anyway here, you know, with that kind of lens.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that and about the cheese and the role of cheese in the, you know, gastronomy. Maybe to say of Italy is probably really broad because there's so much different regional focus in Italy. And so what is it like in Florence or in Tuscany? Is there something that, you know, when people are with you on these tastings and tours that they're most surprised by about cheese in Italy or food in general?
Yeah. I mean, I guess in Tuscany, you know, it would tend to be as part of the meal, like you would have it as part of your aperitivo or antipasto at the beginning of the meal, maybe on a tagliere, which is kind of like, you know, a rustic cheese plate aboard with salumi and some cheeses, a couple of cheeses. It's typically pecorini, sheep's milk cheeses here in Tuscany, and it might be, you know, something a little bit fresher and something aged. So that, you know, it's not like at the end of the meal, and it does tend to be pretty regional, at least here in Tuscany. Now, of course, if we're, you know, going to go to Emilia Romagna, we're going to see Parmigiano Reggiano, it's going to be, you know, prosciutto, those kind of things. So it does vary regionally. And I would say with the tastings, I think, you know, the variety, because there's so many different types of cheeses here that aren't even, you know, I'm talking outside of our industry, you know, on the radar of people in the US. And then there's so many, you know, small producers who don't even export. So even just talking about buffalo milk and what that means, or, you know, burrata and what, you know, what it means is can be quite eye opening. But, you know, the raw milk versus, you know, pasteurized milk, I mean, all of these things are interesting to talk about and taste, you know, and also some of the pairings like mostarda, like spicy condiments, you know, again, that are just kind of new for people is fun to experiment with.
So some of the things that we talked about that surprised me when I met with you in January, and I should point out you are joining us from Italy, folks. She's joining us live from Florence. Well, live as of, you know, when we're talking, this is being recorded, but two things that you said stuck out for me. One is that you mentioned that there is a concern with cholesterol, in Italy. You encounter some people who are just, concerned with the cholesterol. So it's not like Italians are sitting there eating massive amounts of cheese, and that they generally don't eat the rind.
Yeah, it's so funny. It comes up so often when, you know, when people ask me what I do and I say I work in cheese, they'll always say, oh, attento al colesterol, or, you know, be careful with your cholesterol, or, you know, you know, don't eat too much. And I'm like, I'm fine. I'm very healthy. My cholesterol is fine. So it's funny. There is, and I have spoken about this with other people in the cheese industry here. And, you know, I do try to, you know, explain, you know, cheese is actually really healthy for you. You know, of course, if you eat it in moderation, but it has been striking for me. You know, I feel like in the U.S. there would be more of the hang up about carbs and pasta coming up, you know, and here that does come up about cheese. So maybe we could be doing more here about, you know, educating people about, you know, the health benefits of it. In general, particularly on aged cheeses, they don't eat the rind, but there's also, I mean, I feel like in the U.S. and among mongers, there's this feeling like you have to eat the rind. It's a point of pride, or not that you have to, but it's, you know, very, you know, you might be missing out on it. And it's just more of a, you know, there's no shame in leaving it on the plate. And, you know, often they'll say, no, you don't eat the rind on this aged cheese. It's not meant to be eaten. You know, that's the,
right.
And there's no, it's just a different, you know, so.
Yeah. And then one thing that always strikes me when I've had the opportunity to travel, not just in Europe, also in other countries around the world, is, you know, in the United States, we seem to have a little bit of everything in all of our shops. But, you know, in Italy, you really see mostly Italian cheeses in a cheese shop or in a shop that sells cheeses and cured meats and, you know, little prepared foods. And then with the regional focus, if I were to go into a cheese shop or to a cheese stall at a market in Florence, what would I see?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, you know, here in Florence, you know, a heavy selection of Tuscan cheeses. And it does tend to be a lot of sheep's milk cheeses, a little bit of cow's milk, and, there are a few goat's milk producers, but you know, the sheep's milk would be the most predominant. I did want to point out there's a producer of water buffalo milk cheeses in southern Tuscany in the Maremma region, and he's doing fresh cheeses like, you know, mozzarella and burrata, but also some aged cheeses. And he talked about that's a relatively newer producer in the last, I think, 10 years or so. And he talked about, you know, how difficult it was to kind of overcome this bias that the only good mozzarella comes from, you know, southern Italy. So, you know, but he has, you know, broken into the market and, you know, he's in shops and, but there does tend to be kind of a tendency towards tradition. I mean, of course you're going to see Parmigiano Reggiano, you'll see Gorgonzola and, you know, in some shops you'll see, you know, some cheeses from France or Switzerland or, the UK, you might see, you know, a Stilton or something, it does tend to be, quite regional. And what we have two sort of main kind of farmers markets here in Florence. And one of them, I know on the weekends, they'll have, you know, they'll have people coming in, let's say on a Saturday, like from Puglia with fresh cheeses or from, you know, Napoli, that area. But you know, in general, I feel like, you know, the Tuscans are going to lean towards the Tuscan cheese and, you know, maybe Parmigiano Reggiano. There is also another shop here in Florence, where the owner is from Puglia. It's an urban caseificio, an urban dairy, and within the shop they make fresh mozzarella, burrata, with cow's milk that they get here in Tuscany. So that's kind of an interesting thing going on here that I don't think a lot of people know about. And he sells it in the shop, and he also sells to restaurants. So that's kind of an interesting thing for people to check out if they come to visit.
That's really cool. I love that. My daughter was studying in Milan last year, and we also saw that in Milan there were small shops that were opened where people from other parts of Italy had moved to Milan, and they were specializing in the cheese and some other specialty items from the part of Italy that they were from. Like that you know, to showcase that. So that was really, I love that. So I do want to talk about this crowning achievement, or I don't know, I talked about this with another guest, a pinch me moment in your career, which was being inducted into the Guild de Fromager in Italy.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about what that experience was like? And for people who don't understand the significance of what the Guild de Fromager is and what the Italian chapter means.
Right. Yeah. Well, it was started in France, and it's an international guild of cheese professionals, and then expanded, I think, to different countries. And so it was funny. I was at a cheese fair in, I think it was April of last year. It was part of the Italian Cheese Awards. And the way that works is they have this semifinals that's part of this sort of 3-day long fair that's open to the public, and anyone can judge in the semifinals. So they have, like, I forget, I think it was maybe 100 cheeses over 2 days, and anybody can walk in and judge. So it's open to the public in a church, by the way. It was the first time I ever was ate so much cheese in a church. And I was, so then I was at the, you know, walking down, and they had all different, you know, booths with salumi and cheese. And someone came running up to me in Italian, and she said, "Oh, Christine, I recognize you from your Instagram. And we just love what you're doing for Italian cheese. And you're doing such a great job." And I was like, "Oh, thank you." And then she brought me over to meet her friends. And one of them was Emanuela Pirinzin, who was, ended up being the person who sponsored me, who inducted me into the guild. And she's four generations of cheesemakers in the Veneto. And I don't know, it was just such an honor. It's really touching to me to be recognized here and to be recognized in the community here as well, you know, in Italy, and to feel that I'm doing something for their cheeses on a, you know, on a level, you know, speaking English and Italian, so maybe to a different audience than, you know, some people here could. And so, yeah. And then I ended up meeting the president of the guild here, and just talking to him. And then he said, "Oh, you definitely would be qualified. And, you know, you just need someone to sponsor you." And then Emanuela, so it worked out. And it was, you know, in Bra in September during the cheese festival. And, yeah, it was just a huge moment for me, you know, in my career, and also just my personal and professional life, you know, as a dual citizen. I mean, this part of me, this Italian part of my life, has been so important to my identity. So it was really moving for me to have that experience here, and, you know, proud to be a part of it. So yeah, again, getting like even choked up thinking about it.
Oh, I love it. And people can see photos, right, on your...
Yes.
You shared photos on your Instagram account.
Yes, thank you. Yes, they're on my Instagram. And then we had a dinner here in Florence that I helped organize at Continente Antinori in February, around the Taste, which is a 3-day long food fair here. So that was another opportunity to be involved with them and see everyone. So, and then there was just a dinner in Paris when I was at Salon du Fromage. So
yeah, it's the move. The move has done you well, or you've done well with the move, whichever way one wants to approach the way the universe works. I'm going to say, let's take a little break, and we will be right back with more with Christine Januzzi. We're back. Thanks for joining us today at Cutting the Curd. We are talking with Christine Januzzi, and we are talking about a lot of things. I think, you know, a lot of it is about the development of your career and your path, and finding a way to make a career and a life happen in Italy. And one of the things I also love about your story is your path to becoming an international cheese judge, which you have done a few times and in a few different countries. Can you talk about the experience of being an international cheese judge? What is that? It's almost like an international cheese spy. Like, you should have like a badge you can whip out and like show people. So what does that mean to be a judge?
Yes, I still get really excited about it. Well, the first time I did it was in 2019, and that was the first time that the World Cheese Awards was held in Italy. I wasn't living here yet at that time. And I requested a press pass because I wanted to just come and cover it. And then the organizers said, oh, you know, actually, Christine, would you like to be a judge? Because, you know, different competitions have different criteria for their, you know, for judging. And I mean, you know, different structures. But for the World Cheese Awards, they have people from, you know, all different aspects of the industry. So, you know, makers, importers, you know, affineurs, journalists. And so I was like thrilled to be asked. And I said, of course, even though I was honestly very nervous because I had never done that before. And, you know, it's a big responsibility because, it's a huge thing when they win these awards and, you know, it's a responsibility to the makers. And so, yeah, that was my first time. And, you know, ironically, it was in Italy, and it was the first time that an American cheese ever won in the history of the awards. It was a big year. So it's sort of funny for me. And that was the year that I just became a dual citizen. And it was a tie in the final.
That's between right.
Parmigiano Reggiano and Rue River Blue. So it was very dramatic. So, and then I was asked back, you know, it didn't take place in 2020. And then I was asked back the next 3 years. So it was in Oviedo, Spain, and then in Wales, and then just last year in Norway. And it's an amazing experience. I mean, last year there were over 4,000 cheeses. You, in this particular competition, you judge in a team of two or three. I've always been in three. And you have a table of about 45 different cheeses to go through. And they're not all the same style of cheese. So you might have four of one type, four of another type. So you're not tasting like 45 blue cheeses. That's not how it works in this particular competition. And it's really intense, but exciting. I mean, it's such a rewarding, and like, you don't think about anything else in that time that you're tasting with your team, and to taste with other people who are just as into it as you are. It's such a, you know, I don't know. It's exciting and it's fascinating. And so you can award as many silver, bronze, silver, and gold medals as you like, but only one cheese gets the super gold. And so only one cheese will advance to the finals. So that's kind of your, the big decision at the end, depending on how many gold cheeses you have. So that's been just a really exciting thing to be a part of. And then to meet people, I mean, celebrities, let's say, in the cheese industry from all over the world, and just interact with people. And I've made lots of new friends that way. And to also just meet people that you on social who are there, and in every different country, learn a bit about the cheeses of that country. You know, Norway, I mean, I'd never been to Norway before. So that's been a huge honor and a really great experience for me.
So what about your palate? When that first time you were asked, and, you know, were you nervous? I would have imposter syndrome up the wazoo if I.
I mean, I definitely was very nervous, I remember. And they have, within the team, you have a team captain. I think it's maybe called something else now besides captain, like manager or something. But, you know, you kind of have someone who's like leading. And so that first year, you know, it wasn't me, of course. And so that was sort of reassuring. And I was with two people who had done it before. So that was, reassuring. And I think every year they try to pair you with, you know, someone who's definitely done it before. So I've had that role now in the other years. Everybody maybe has a different strategy, but you try to kind of arrange so that you're tasting, you know, from the more mild cheeses to the stronger ones. And you kind of get into a rhythm with your team too, like of how you're scoring and how you're, so I actually really like the idea of, and the format of the team strategy. I judged in the Italian Cheese Awards for the first time last fall, and it's different where you're tasting three cheeses in a category of 10 different categories. So it was 30 cheeses, but you would taste like 3 in the very fresh category, 3 in the sheep's milk category. But it was, you're judging completely on your own. Mm-hmm. So it was a different, you know, very different experience. So, but I kind of like, I do kind of like that idea of judging together and kind of coming to a consensus. And I think in every case in the past 4 years, I mean, we've always, you know, more or less, you know, on the same page, I think, you know. Mm-hmm.
So when you are leading a tasting or writing about cheese, what's your approach to a cheese? What characteristics are you looking for off the bat? Are you starting with, you know, well, I guess we all kind of start with appearance, right? Because we all eat with our eyes first. But how do you lead people through a tasting of a cheese?
Yeah, you know, it really depends. I mean, of course, yes, of course, the appearance and of course the flavor. It's also the people, though. Like, I love telling the stories of the people that I've met, the makers or the history. I mean, it's so beautiful to share those stories, and it's nice to be able to talk about if I visited the producer, you know, what that's like, what it's like in the mountains, or, I mean, something like, you know, an affinatore and an affiner in French, that, you know, people are doing that here in Italy too. And a lot of people don't even know about that aspect of cheesemaking. So it's fun to talk about that. Yeah. So there's so many aspects. And then of course here, you know, the history, I mean, such a deep history, you know, cheese is like, you know, Parmigiana-Reggiana that is going back almost 1,000 years. I mean, there's so much, and then it becomes a lens into the geography and the region as well. You know, there's such pride, even a cheese like Asiago. I was going to mention this, when we were talking about traveling, when we met traveling in Italy. I mean, Asiago is a place, and I had the opportunity to go on a press trip there. And there are small producers just making, you know, a small number of wheels a day in the mountains in the summer. They bring in these malghe mountain huts, you know, like let's say in Switzerland, where people are doing, transhumans. They still do it there. They bring the cows down in September. It's a parade in the city. I mean, a lot of people don't even know Asiago is a place in Italy. Mm-hmm. So I can have somebody taste, you know, a tiny cheese, a cheese from a tiny producer that wouldn't even, you know, make it to the U.S. And then we can talk about all of this history in this place that, you know, maybe they didn't even know existed. And, you know, this small producer who's doing this out of a passion, going up, taking the cows up in the summer for a few months, you know, it's, mm-hmm. yeah, it's a beautiful lens into the history, the culture, and of course the food.
Are there any Italian cheeses that you are really into right now? Like, or what, or is there one that, or two that are just like always on your table?
Oh, such a hard question.
I know, it's like picking a favorite child. It's like, it's hard.
Well, I really love Robbiola di Roccoverano from Piedmont. That's a raw goat's milk cheese, and that's a beautiful, fluffy, I love that cheese. Recently I tasted a Grana style cheese similar in style to Parmigiano-Reggiano, but made with buffalo milk. Mm. That was really interesting. I mean, I always have Parmigiano-Reggiano in the fridge. I mean, I love fresh ricotta. So, Caciocavallo. We were talking about that video, the Caciocavallo. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about that video? Let's talk about that video for a second, because what is that Caciocavallo video, first of all, for people who may not have seen it, and where can they see it?
Okay, well, that's on my Instagram page. It got over 10 million views last year, and I actually filmed it at the same fair that I mentioned where I met Emanuela, the semifinals of the Italian Cheese Awards. And so part of this fair, I was just walking around, and I had never seen, you know, the Caciocavallo cheese, which, you know, our listeners are probably familiar with the cheese, but I had never seen it, you know, prepared in this way before, where it's basically suspended over a flame, hung by a chain, and then melted, and then with a knife, and then scraped on bread. And it's kind of a street food interpretation. But again, going back to history, the maker, actually, of this Caciocavallo, Michele, ended up, I didn't even know him. I just filmed and edited the video, and then we became connected after it went viral. He said he had a friend in the U.S. who follows me and said, sent him a screenshot and said, oh, you know, this girl is molto brava. And look, you've become famous, Michele. He sent me a message on Instagram. He said, oh, you know, thank you for this video. So, but he said, you know, the shepherds in the past would be, you know, out at night and sleeping at night and hang the cheese over a branch to keep it away from the animals. And, you know, the heat of the fire would melt it and it would start dripping and they would, you know, eat it with the bread. And so that's, you know, what they say, then, you know, whether that's myth or, but that's sort of how they say this tradition was born. And, and so I just, you know, there was lots of people around and eating it and filming it, but I just, you know, was filming a bit and then edited it. And then it was really exciting. It went viral and I've become friends now with them. I mean, it was not a paid thing or anything. It was just something I thought was really cool. And they actually make some other great cheeses as well. They're doing some interesting things in Southern Italy with blue cheese. But it's called Caciocavallo Impiccato, which means hang cheese, basically hang Caciocavallo. So yeah, you can see it on my Instagram.
Definitely. We will make sure to link to that. And so of all of these many hats that you're wearing and, listening to you even talk about cheese, I mean, definitely the journalist in you is there. It definitely is there. But is there a part of what you do, that is kind of becomes taken center stage? Is there a part that you wish you could pay more attention to? How's the balance?
You know, it's interesting and I feel like it's always changing a bit. I mean, I've always loved writing and I consider myself a storyteller, and it's interesting how the social media has become an outlet for that. And even just how my photos and videos have evolved. I mean, I don't have that kind of background. I mean, I'm not an expert or anything, but it's been really fun, like expanding that aspect of my way of storytelling. And, you know, people's attention span has changed. So, you know, I might connect with more people now, you know, through the Instagram, through a video, a 15-second reel, or, you know, some photos or meet in a video talking than I would in an article. Although, you know, I'm still right. I mean, I just, wrote an article for Culture Magazine about Parmigiano. That's the centerfold and the best cheeses issues. So, it's just interesting how, you know, that aspect of my, and I do really enjoy it. And I've, you know, connected with people all over the world through the social media. So that's been fun. I mean, I do love doing the in-person things and, hosting people. I mean, I like food, I like cooking. So that's a fun aspect of my business. So it's just, it's constantly evolving. I mean, I feel like I'm still a one woman operation. So, you know, I feel like, there's a lot I still want to do, you know, more with selling merchandise, maybe a cheese box. I think there's a lot, you know, to still, and more of the bespoke tours too, more of, you know, bringing people around, because I have relationships with people in this country. And because I speak Italian, I have, you know, it's a nice bridge between the two cultures, you know, and you're going to get a different experience with me, you know, than with, you know, I'm grateful that I learned the language as an adult, so that, you know, now I'm able to speak with a shepherd who probably doesn't speak any English, and I can then share, you know, his or her story. So, so it's exciting, you know, how it's still growing. And, it's been really exciting.
Will you be back in New York this year?
Yes, I'll be back for the Fancy Food Show for a bit in June, I think, and then probably around the holidays. I still have my apartment in New York. I still love New York. Mm-hmm. Still consider myself, you know, a New Yorker, NYC cheese chick. And I do some events when I'm there too, and I've done some private tastings when I've been back in people's homes. So please, shameless plug, but please reach out to me if you'll be in Italy or if you want to do something when I'm in New York.
We're here to promote. That's so great. You know, it keeps coming up in this industry about rising tides raise all ships. So, right. You know, and it's amazing. We can think we know all there is to know about Italian cheese, but there's always more to know about Italian cheese. So I appreciate you joining us and exposing us to some more of what is going on in Italy, and also about the possibilities out there for people who are interested in cheese, either professionally or just just as a cheese tourist. So I just want to thank you so much for joining us on Cutting the Curd. It was so great talking to you. I'm looking forward to seeing you at the Fancy Food Show in June.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was great to chat with you. And thanks for including me here.
And so can you just briefly tell us where people can find out more about you or find some of your writing?
Yes. So, of course, on my Instagram, NYC Cheese Chick. Also, I'm on TikTok and Facebook, same NYC Cheese Chick. I have the link to my website on my Instagram, which includes my portfolio with lots of my articles. I've got plenty on Culture Magazine, but I've written for a lot of other publications as well. So,
cool. Well, now I think like when we've exposed people to your name, and we're going to find that your writing is in a lot of places people may even already have on their coffee table. I know my issue of culture is right upstairs. So, but thanks again for joining us. And thank you everyone for listening to Cutting the Curd. You can always find us on your favorite streaming platforms. Make sure to leave us a review. It really does help spread the word about Cutting the Curd. And you can always find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.